good to turn on the light. Don't laugh, it will be alright. Pull me out another phone. I'll ring and see if your friends are home. Perhaps the strange ones in the dome can lend us a book we can read up alone and try. Get it on like once before. Where people stared and Cobain's eyes and scored like the video filthy song. His name was always Buddy, and he's shrugging it as to stay. She'd sigh like with the Wonder Kid and turn her face away. She's uncertain if she likes him, but she knows she really loves him. It's a crash course for the rest. It's a driving Saturday. Young, the foreman, great at work. Neither hands nor limbs would burst. Tight enough to keep formation with this fallout saturation. Cursing at the astronaut who stands and still by his cabinet. He's crashing out with Sylvia, the bureau supply for aging men. It's not in it, he gazes to the shore. Once had rage to see the rage no more. Like the video film bizarre. His name was always Buddy, and he's shrugging it as to stay. She sighed like with the Wonder Kid and turned her face away. She's uncertain if she likes him, but you know she really loves him. It's a crash course for the rivers. It's a driving Saturday. His name was always Buddy, and he'd shrugging it as to stay. She'd sigh like twit the Wonder Kid and turn her face away. She's uncertain if she likes him, but you know she really loves him. It's a crash course for the rivers. It's a driving Saturday. Driving Saturday. It's a driving Saturday.
WMFO in Medford, 104 on the dot. It's Crash Course for the Ravers Show. I'm Brian Young. My number is 855-915-9636. And yes, rest in peace, Justine Kovalt just passed away. And I had some songs up here for her. Boom, 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 boom. Start with this one. Do a Justine Kovalt block. No heavy winded speeches or anything. We're just going to let the music do the talking. And then afterwards, I was going to do a block or some kind of a tribute for my friend Philippe Marcade of the Senders, passed away the other day as well. And I had an interview with him in 2017, and I'm going to see if I can get that on here. I'm not sure yet. I'm already having problems with it, but we'll check it out. A little ways to go. We got some Justine to play first while I'm dealing with it. And yes, this goes out to her and her family and friends. All my love to her family and friends. This one is called Be Your Own Reason, Justine and the Unclean.
Do it for me.
91.5 WMFO in Medford. Yeah, so Philippe Marquard unfortunately passed away the other day. Pancreatic cancer, I guess. So, and then we find out about Justine. It's just been a bad week. But I interviewed Philippe back in 2017. And his buddy Steve Shevlin called in while we were talking too. And it's a good interview. Whether you don't knew who Philippe Marquard was, lead guy from the Senders, or even if you don't and you just want to hear some funny stories about New York City back in the punk days, 70s, and it's a really good interview. So let me see if I can get it on once it gets going. Well, let's do a quick commercial first.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs.
PSA.
But it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
All right, let's see if this works. Fingers crossed. Philippe Marquard, are you with us? Yes. Keep listening, folks. It's 91.5 WMFO in Medford.
Yes, you do. You do.
Now, 91.5 WMFO in Medford. Great show so far. Started off with Billy Connors in here, playing some new stuff from Billy Connors' project. And then we had Bailey's band kicking some butt in here. Great job, guys. They're still putting this stuff together. If you got a question for them, 855-915-9636, but they won't be here for long. I'm waiting on Phil Marquard's call, playing Senders right now, and I think that might be him, actually. Oops, I just logged off by accident. Phil?
Hey, Brian.
Phil Marquard from the Senders. What's up, buddy?
Brian Young from Boston. How cool is that?
Believe me, man, you're a lot cooler. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
What's that? I'm doing great. I'm doing great. It's been a great show, and I have a gig after this, so I'm sitting here in my like leather pants and all decked out. So it's
cool. Yeah, I was calling you to ask you if you could lend me $5.
Absolutely. What do you need, man? For the bus, okay. Are you coming up?
Okay, so we're good. So, okay, bye.
Yeah, you just want $5. That's all, right?
Well, come to think of it, could you make it 10?
I think I could do that for you, for sure. I just want to log in here so I can put your name in. So it kind of, hold on.
I'm on the air right now.
What's that? Yeah, you're on the air. You're live, buddy. You're live on
Hello,
the air.
Everybody.
91.5 WMFO in Medford. It is Phil Marquard, lead guy from the Senders. You just put out a book, Punk Avenue. Great stuff. And I've been a big fan of yours before I heard of this stuff. I mean, you played with Johnny Thunders. I mean, we love him and New York Dolls and, oh, my God.
I don't know. Where do you want to start? Well, first I want to say you were on some show yesterday, and it was funny. You had posted call in, and I didn't see how to listen to it. So I'm like, well, I'll just call in. And I started listening to the show you were on yesterday. You know, I'm listening on the phone. And then when they finally answered, it seemed like they had some trouble picking up the phone.
It was really funny because they were telling people to call to ask me questions, but you called to plug your show.
No, that's not what I was doing at all.
Yes, you did.
No, I did.
You did a good thing to do that.
No, I of course I'm going to mention it, but I was calling to simply ask what the stream was. And, like, it didn't even seem like anyone else was calling. You know, I thought I was helping out, but then it sounded like, yeah, she's like, well, Phil's talking on my show right now. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, man. You know, we're all cool. You know, why do I care as long as she's not on the same time as me, right?
But then it went really crazy. I was telling you an email. Echo arrived from somewhere. We don't know where. So everything I was saying, it was repeated. You know,
I was listening to the podcast after.
Okay.
Right.
It was insane. I thought I was tripping on acid. And so it was just total madness, but it was fun.
But weren't you telling them that I sabotaged their show, that it was me? Like, weren't you saying that on the program?
At least 10 times. I told them that was Brian who put the echo on the show. <That's>, he fucked you up.
That's very funny.
He messed you up.
That's right. No problem, man. So, I don't know. Where do you want to start with this? I mean, you're originally from France. French transplant. You started and came over to Boston first, where, you know, right here, pretty much,
yeah,
right?
That's the first chapter in the book, Punk Avenue. I got to remind everybody the title.
Yep.
It's called Punk Avenue. It's from Three Rooms Press. It's available in the stores right now. So I hope you all get it. I hope you all pick it. And that's how I like the book began. When I was 17 years old, that's 1972, I came to spend 1 month in the state. I met a kid in Amsterdam. His name was Bruce. And Bruce came from Boston. He was actually just coming out of the Boston University. And he had traveled Europe on a motorcycle. And he landed in Amsterdam. We met. And he was just really funny. I dug him right away. And about a month later, I took him to Paris. He visited Paris. And then he's telling me, well, look, I could talk to my dad and make an arrangement that you'd be like a student au pair, you know, and that way you could get a visa. So he did that super nicely.
Right.
And so I went to spend 1 month in Boston, but I extended my trip a bit. In the end, I ended up staying for 40 years.
Wow.
So that's what happened.
And here you are.
And here I am.
So what was the first band you started there, Phil?
The first band?
Yeah, what was
Descenders.
I thought you had something before that, or maybe you played with some other bands before that.
Well, I played in a little school band in Paris, you know.
Right.
That was kind of like my first steps in rock and roll, was playing drums. But then that, all the traveling in the States, we went through the entire USA. We did like a bit of an easy rider in a van. And so it was only several years later when I got to New York. Now we're talking about 1975.
Right.
I started a band. I actually, through Jerry Thunders, I met one of his best friends, whose name is Steve Shevlin. I'm just telling my crazy today, too.
Steve is going to be calling in in a little bit, by the way, you know.
That's super cool. That's
right,
what I was
right.
saying. You know, he would be calling you, too. So I met Steve, who lived on 10th Street in Avenue D, and he had this great loft. And Steve was an ex-boxer. He had been boxing for 5 years.
Boxing.
He had a Golden Glove for 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, he is a big dude. I met him down at your show. I went down to see Phil Marcade. He had a great book opening the other night, and Steve Shevlin played with him. That was fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you. It was very cool, yeah.
Yeah, keep going.
And, you know, at the time, you know, you would have never guessed he'd been a boxer because he looked more like Willie DeVille, you know, tall and thin, always dressed up in sharkskin suits, you know, and he
very
was
cool.
just the coolest dude, you know, really. And he was starting to play bass, and he had a drum kit in his loft. So pretty soon I was backing him up on the drums almost every day. We were just playing around to records and stuff. And he had two other friends that were guitar players that started to come around. One was from Liverpool, and one...
Hello?
Fingers began that way, and we were very, I guess you could say, international.
Right.
There was not one person that was from the same country as the other. So we started playing that way in 75, the Senders. And we did that with that lineup for about 6 months. And then the rest of the band fired me as a drummer and rehired me as the lead singer. I never knew if it was really because they wanted me to sing or if it was because they hated my drumming. But anyway...
Now, wait a minute, Phil. Who sang before you?
The whole band, and I pretty much sung every song from behind the drums.
Oh, you
I
did?
I think we all felt it was... but it was a bit boring to watch, you know. It kind of was missing like a frontman. So we hired another drummer. The first drummer we had was Billy Roger, who passed away a long time ago, unfortunately, but he was a great fucking kid.
Yeah, sorry,
and
man.
I still miss him. But then we had Tony Machine. Tony Machine had been playing
Tony
with
Machine.
Adults,
right.
After Jerry Nolan. And then he played for years and years with Buster Poindexter. Also, he played in Sylvain's band, Criminals.
Sylvain, right?
Tony on drums for about a year. But eventually it didn't work out with Tony. We felt really bad, but he was boozing a lot. He missed a couple of shows. We were trying to get serious a bit about things. So we took another drummer, and that was Mark Bourset, who became our drummer for the entire rest of the time. We ended up playing for 35 years. So that's how the Senders became.
Well, you are a fantastic singer. I sing in a band myself, but, you know, to me it's like a joke compared to what you can do, man. You're just great. You know, one of my heroes.
Well, you're too kind, especially since the other night at that concert I was really shot. So that wasn't my best performance, but you're too kind. Thank you much.
Oh, it was a blast. And you know what? I would have gone down even if it wasn't. You know, even if I knew if you weren't calling this show. You know, if I didn't have any of this, it wouldn't have mattered. I would have gone down for that because I love you. You know, I've always loved your stuff so much. But
I was so happy that we had such a turnout of great friends that came to play.
Right.
I invited several bands, and I wanted it to be like a big party, you know.
Oh, yeah, you can feel the love in the room, yeah.
Yeah, and I was so touched that every performer I invited said yes. And so we had the Waldos with Walter Lowe.
Waldos, right.
So great. And Lynn Vaughn, who plays in Carvels, you know, and she's just fabulous.
She was.
And then there's a band that I admire so much.
Oh, they were called
Daddy Long Legs.
They were so good,
Daddy
Phil.
Yes, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm glad you turned me on. I'm glad you turned me on to them. Now I'm talking with them, and they're going to send me their CDs so I can play them here, you know?
Way cool.
Yeah.
I think they're so fucking amazing. Oh, they're so amazing.
Right.
And I contacted them, told them what it was about, and they would want to play. Immediately and suddenly, yeah, we'd love to. We'd be honored to. We know the Senders. We know who you are. You're a great band. So that was really a joy. And so they came to play too.
That was
make
great.
Everything really complete. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone, check out Daddy Long Legs as well. That was just a great band. And they're young guys. They're from Brooklyn, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're very young. They're in their 20s. And they got the blues down to a T, and it's like, so what they're playing is so wild, you know. Mm-hmm. They're just the complete opposite of your, like, typical wide blues band that's just so boring, you know. They're wild. I would call it punk rock. I would call it punk blues.
Right.
I think they're so fabulous. And if anybody's listening to the show and don't know them yet, you must check them out.
Definitely.
Daddy Long Legs.
Definitely.
They're rural.
They sure do. And, so, just a little stuff in the book. Everyone here in this area, they know the Real Kids and John Felice. You actually, like, stayed at his house, didn't you?
Yeah, we used to come play at the Rat a lot. I love the Rat.
The Rat.
The audience was always so great. I think the Senders had some of the very best gig at the Rat. And John would put us up so nicely, and we'd open up for the Real Kids many times. And, I just love them. You know, what a great band.
Yeah.
And that song, All Kind of Girls, is a classic.
Sure.
And they're just fabulous. You know, they're one of the garage bands that I love the most. And to me, they also have the great memories of Boston, coming to play in Boston, meet up with them guys. It was fabulous. We played at the Rat and another place with them. Oh, I forgot the name. A much bigger place. Was it called Paradise, maybe?
Yeah, that's the Paradise.
Yeah, I think that might have been it then, yeah.
The Channel, maybe. The Channel's another one.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the gigs at the Rat were just so fun.
Yeah, of course.
It was great.
Yeah, you had like... Phil has like a whole, page and a half just about the Rat, and like you basically say it was like your favorite gig you can remember.
Yeah,
in Boston.
To
yeah.
Go there. And what matters, the difference with New York is they were maybe a little bit more, jaded a bit in New York, but also the drinking place. It seems like everybody was drunk in the room at the Rat, and so it was wild.
Right.
We had some gigs that were just completely wild. We always loved going there.
That's excellent.
But for me, it was also a little bit like coming back to I could almost say my American hometown since the first city I lived in the States. You know, I lived in New York for 38 years.
Yep.
But I lived for two years in Boston.
At first in Boston.
I really like Boston, yeah.
Yep.
I was living in Boston from 73, 74.
Yeah, then you were...
I became a good friend with a kid named John who taught me how to play guitar. He became the guitar player in the band DMZ later on.
Oh, yeah, DMZ, sure. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, didn't you spend some time... You spent a lot of time down in Provincetown with some cool people, too, right?
Yeah. I tell you a funny anecdote that's mentioned in the book, too, but maybe I can tell the folks on the radio.
Sure.
We got invited in Provincetown the first time by a girl named Cookie Mueller. Cookie Mueller is just that...
Cookie Mueller, yeah.
Chick. Yeah. She's in many John Waters movie. She was from Baltimore, and she was a good friend of John Waters.
Right.
And she was in Boston for a while. She was also very good friends of my friend Bruce, who I shared the apartment with, Norm Golden and David Armstrong, which were photographers. Of course, Norm became extremely famous, you know.
Right.
And, so Cookie Mueller was a friend of theirs, and we met her in Boston. She invited us to come to her house in Provincetown.
Right.
So we thought, all right, we'll check it out. But Bruce had never been to Provincetown. Of course, me neither. So we went there, we drove there, but it took longer than we expected. So we got there at around 3 or 4 in the morning. We couldn't find our house. And finally, we did find it, but the lights were off. It seems like everybody was sleeping in there. So we noticed that the door wasn't locked. So we didn't want to wake her up, so we just kind of tiptoed in the house. We didn't want to put the light on and be rude and wake everybody up. So I found a sofa that unfolded into a bed. So I opened it up and went to sleep. Next morning, I woke up with the barrel of a rifle 2 inches from my nose.
Oh, my God.
And with like a little guy in his pajamas, you know, just like in Bugs Bunny, you know. So this guy had a rifle in my head. And
oh, my God.
Another one who had a rifle on Bruce's head. And the guy looks at me with a rifle and said, "Who the fuck are you? What are you doing here?"
Right.
That's when we realized we're at the wrong house.
And he ended up being the sheriff, right?
Yes. And it was really funny that the guy, you know, once they understood, we explained we were looking for Cookie Mueller's house. We got the wrong address. This guy started laughing. He fixed his breakfast. He's still in his pajamas. He goes to his room to change. He comes back down. He's in a fucking... I'm sorry. He's in a cop uniform.
Right.
He was Provincetown sheriff.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah, I didn't mean to steal the punchline, but I got excited. You know, I just read the book myself. You know, I didn't want to say your punchline to it, but like, you know, I know it, and it's such a great book.
It's perfect, Brian. We work as a team.
Right. Telling the story. Yeah, it's a great book. Everyone's got to go out and get it. Punk Avenue by Phil Marcade. So, we'll see what Steve can... I know he's probably trying to call in. He's got an interpreter, I guess. Steve went deaf, right? Steve Shovel.
Yeah, was a beauty. I heard something. Is it?
No, it's not me.
Sorry, that kind of cut off for a second. Yeah, that's why it was so touching for me to see him play bass the other day. Steve became deaf. I don't mean a little deaf. I mean completely deaf.
Deaf, yeah.
From probably the Bucks scene at the beginning, and then all the years of playing, you know, clubs with the Senators.
Boxing, yeah.
Have been more and more trapped with them with his ears, until finally a doctor told him, look, you should learn sign language while you can still hear a little bit, because within a year you're going to be completely deaf.
Right.
So, and very sadly, it has been irreversible. There's nothing that could be done to stop it. So
learn sign language. Hold on one second. Hold on, Phil. I think I have him. Let's just say hi, get him on the phone, and continue. All right. Hold on.
Talking of the devil. Yeah.
Hey, Steve. Steve Shevlin.
Hold on. Yes. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Brian, this is Steve.
Hi, Steve. Steve Shevlin, everyone.
How you doing?
Great.
Great listening to you today. Nice meeting you, Brian, at the show the other day.
Oh, it's great meeting you. Can Phil just finish up talking about, like, I'm sorry, we're talking about you. I wanted him to finish it, and then we can talk to you.
I'm talking about you right now.
Right.
I was talking about how we met, and I was talking about how you became deaf.
Yeah, go ahead.
25 years, and so I was incredibly great to see you play bass the other day. It was like the best thing I could have had ever dreamed of.
Well, he had an operation, so now he could partially hear, but I guess it's like he has a hard time with a phone, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, what happens is I have what they call a cochlear implant. What it does is it amplifies various frequencies, and so what it's really tuned into is so that I can have one-to-one conversations with people. So anything like music or extraneous sounds or things outside, it blocks that out so I can hear voices well. So in a situation like doing a gig, it's not really that helpful. It's very good one-to-one. It doesn't really help me on the telephone at all. So that's why I've got interpreters help me today.
That's understood, man. It's fantastic that it's fantastic that we can communicate at all. I mean, it's just great, and it's great to hear you, Steve.
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing that Philippe maybe forgot about. We actually met in Provincetown. We had many of the same friends, and we only actually met once. But I was friends with Cookie Mueller, and I remember them taking me around and introducing me to Bruce and Philippe and David at the South. I only saw them that one or two times there. And then it was about a year or two later when Johnny Boomerang, my husband, went started the band. And I also want to correct one thing. You did play in another band before the Senators.
Right.
It was called Yakety Yak.
Yakety Yak. Okay.
That's right. We were the first Yakety Yak. That's right.
Is that what you guys called yourselves for? It basically was the Senators, probably, right?
Yeah, we were going to be Yakety Yak, but then we saw some newspaper. There was another band called Yakety Yak. So we dropped the name and switched it to the Senators.
Right. Okay. That's very cool.
Yeah, I think we did two gigs like that.
Do you have any other things you need to add, Steve? Did you read the book already, Steve?
Oh, sure, I read the book, of course.
Yes, that's great. He says great things about you, and it...
There's so many memories, and actually seeing Philippe was just... I hadn't seen him in like 7 or 8 years, and getting back together was like really an emotional experience for me. It was great.
I was there for it. That was like so amazing. That was great, man. It was great meeting both of you.
Well, thank you.
You anything else you want to tell us about? Give us another story, Philippe. Give us a good one.
Well, there are so many. I guess you know I can't tell all those stories because some of you won't read the book.
Right.
So we'll just have but I can give you what it is if you want. I can tell you about,
give us a good Steve story since we have him right here.
Ah, good Steve story.
Yeah, Steve Shevlin. Steve mostly played bass with the Senators, correct?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Absolutely. Yeah, only bass.
Right, only bass. So, give us a great Steve story.
Well, there isn't one that comes to mind. What's the great Steve story in my book, Steve?
They're all great.
There's just so many stuff.
I know I read them. Okay.
Well, there's many stuff. There is all the stories in Boston, too, with Steve. There is all the stories that all through the years. There's a million of them.
Oh, yeah. You got to really read the book. But go ahead.
One time he got attacked by three thugs at Max's Kansas City. It was pretty heavy. They broke the bottles and they're trying to stab him with it. And so I had brass knuckles, you know, brass knuckles. And
yeah.
I think they're illegal in New York. It was really funny that there was an ad in a biker paper that read, they were selling a paperweight, you know, like to put your...
It was sold as a paperweight, yes.
Yeah,
this brass knuckles.
Exact replica of brass knuckle made of brass. But they were not brass knuckles, they were paperweight. So anyway, I got my paperweight and I got him, tried to help Steve. And so there was this major rumble at Max's Kansas City. We were fighting like crazy against those three guys. You have to read the story in the book, but to make it short, I ended up busted by the police, thrown in jail overnight. Steve was pretty cut up, pretty messed up. But
he's a boxer, man. I bet he kicked some ass.
I took care of the three dudes that you wouldn't believe it. You don't want to fuck with Steve Shevlin. That's
right.
For sure.
That's a dumb move.
I keep cursing. I must remember that to say curse word.
Right.
Really,
if you do, you know, roll over it. Don't apologize, but try not to, please, because they can fine us if you do.
I will try to pay attention and not say any of the F word again.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Or say it in French. No one would know.
There you go.
Yeah. Can't you do that?
Sure.
You had some great stories with Nancy Spungen in it. Sid Vicious's girlfriend. What was the deal with her?
Well, you know, it's funny because everybody puts her down. Everybody, I think she's been treated very unfairly in the books and movies because she was a sweet girl. She was a sad girl, and everybody kind of exploited her a lot. All the rock and rollers, you know. For her dope, she would buy them heroin, and then when they saw her at the club, they would act like they didn't know her. And I felt like she was kind of like the lame duck of the bunch, you know?
Lame duck.
And so, of course, we had a really good laugh. When she called me on the phone after she had gone to England, she called me on the phone maybe a month later, and now she had a very strong British accent, which was kind of funny in the first place. But
it was fake, right? The accent.
Well, it was just very quick, you know. Like, she didn't speak like that a month before.
Right.
But she was calling me to tell me how excited and extremely happy that she had met the coolest guy. She was so happy. She had a great boyfriend. His name was Sid Vicious. And I'm like, Sid who? She's like, Sid Vicious, you know, the Sex Pistols.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. And she had heard of them. This is so cool. So they were very happy. Now, fortunately, everybody know how it ended. But at the time, they were thrilled. But the funny thing that happened, I was going to tell you, I tell the folks on the radio, is that she left me her cat when she went to London. She had a big black cat. She asked me if I could take care of it. So I took care of the cat. I said, yeah, you can leave the cat with me. Don't worry. What I didn't know is that the cat was badly hooked onto heroin. I'm not joking. It was a junkie cat. What happened is that she would leave the spoons. Yeah, because she was shooting up at the time, and she would leave the spoons in which she cooked the heroin in the sink. You know, she wouldn't wash them.
Right.
And the smell of the opiates and somehow attracted that poor cat, and he started licking the spoons.
That's how he got hooked.
In no time, he had a really, really... He had a big monkey on his back.
Right.
He was a cat with a monkey on his back. and so when I got the cat, we had a little kitten named Poof.
Yep.
And Nancy's junkie cat attacked the kitten. it was pretty heavy. The kitten was already bleeding and stuff.
Oh, man.
So I tried to separate them, and I grabbed Nancy's cat from the back neck. Now, I knew cats, but I didn't know how to deal with a junkie cat.
No.
The thing was, it was wild. It turned around and plunged every teeth and claw into my forearm, and I found myself with a cat hooked onto my arm. Imagine how painful that was.
Well, junkie cat, I mean, like it seems like you have a lot of problems with the animals. And you had, the pot dog? What was that?
Yes, it's not just a book about people who took drugs. There's a lot about animals who took drugs also.
Right.
Yeah, I found a dog in the street, and he was very cute, you know. And so I took him home. And the next day, first thing in the morning, I went to buy him some dog food. And when I came back, first thing I noticed when I opened the door is that there was pot scattered around the floor. And I look at my desk where there was a bag of marijuana, and it was gone. And then I found it, you know, ripped to shred. And I realized the dog had had all the pots. And then what happened was pretty funny too, but I shouldn't say everything, other than there'll be no point to read the book. But yes, it was the dog who ripped my pot. I also talk about a monkey in the book, which was my friend Bruce Monkey.
Right.
And it was a really cool little monkey, like a squirrel monkey.
Yep.
And Bruce once had a party, and we were surprised that Andy Warhol showed up at the party.
Andy Warhol, holy.
Yeah, yep. With his entourage. And as soon as Andy Warhol saw the monkey, he had to have it. He really wanted that monkey.
Andy Warhol wanted the monkey.
Yeah, because his name was Joseph, the monkey, and he was just so cool, you know. And so during the entire party, Andy Warhol was making offers to Bruce to buy the monkey. But Bruce didn't want to sell his monkey. So you got Andy Warhol going, "I'll give you $5,000, darling." And Bruce going like, "Well, no, it's not for sale." But Bruce was very poor, so that was very tempting. The offer went up to $15,000. At one point, he's saying, "I will give you a few paintings." I mean, Bruce was pulling his hair out.
Right.
But he loved the monkey too much, so
man.
He didn't sell it.
Yep. It's touching story.
And there's also another dog that was Babe. Babe was a dog that Jenny Fontes gave me because he had bought it for his wife, Julie. But Julie didn't want it. So Jenny gave it to me. And me, I didn't know what to do with the dog either. So I gave it to Bruce. And Bruce had it for, years and years and years. It became the most important thing in his life. He loved Babe. And
it was Johnny. It was Johnny Thunder's dog, right? So
that's first, yeah.
That's great. And Johnny Thunders actually did play with you for a while. I guess he was your lead guitarist for some gigs, right?
Yes, for 5 gigs. That was really funny. What happened is our guitar player, his name was Jorge, went back to Mexico. So we found ourselves with no guitar player. The other guitar player we had from Liverpool, really, then quit the band. And so we thought that was pretty much the end of the Senders. I mean, we tried to look for a guitar player. We were not really finding anyone. At the exact same time, we got a call from Johnny from London, Flipper, because that's what he called me, actually.
Flipper, yeah.
Called me Flipper, yeah. I became Flipper, thanks to Jenny. He was like Philippe, then he called me Flipper, and then it was just Flipper. But anyway, he called me on the phone, "Hey, Flipper, hey, what you guys doing?" So I told him, "Well, we lost a guitar player, we don't know if we're going to go on." And he goes, "Well, listen, I just had an argument with the Heartbreakers. I want to do something else for a while, so how about you book some gigs? I'll come to New York right away. We'll rehearse. We'll play together." So I said, "You mean we'll back you up? We'll play the Heartbreakers songs?" Said, "No, no, no. The Senders. I want to learn the Senders song."
That's so excellent.
I thought he was joking. He came to New York, and we were amazed that he really insisted on rehearsing, learning our tunes.
Mm-hmm.
So we did those shows. There's one of them at Maxis Kansas City that's on YouTube. If anybody wants to check it out, it's really cool. It says "The Senders" with Johnny Thunders.
Yeah.
And so there's a few songs from that on YouTube.
Maybe I'll try and get it up on the, you know, I don't usually play for YouTube, but because of this occasion, after we're done, I'll play a great Senders song. And then while I'm doing that, I'll look for it on YouTube and see if I can play it.
Well, you know, also if you do a postcard on the internet, it's a great thing to watch. The sound really isn't that great, so just to listen to, it's not so fabulous, but it's a great film to watch. It was filmed on the 8mm camera. It's just a great little film.
Right. I'll play it anyways. It's only a couple minutes, right?
Yeah, a couple of songs, yeah.
Yeah.
It was really cool playing with Johnny for those 5 gigs. We did 3 at Max's and then 2 at her house. It was wild. It was
right,
really great.
Right. I think Steve wanted to say something. Did you, Steve?
Yeah. I wanted to say something. When we first
saw it and we were playing. Johnny used to come by all the time. In fact, Johnny's the one who reintroduced me to Philippe, and we practiced all summer long with Philippe on drums mostly, and me on bass, and Johnny on guitar, and other people dropped by all the time. But one thing, and I know Philippe's really humble about these type of things, but I'm sure you remember when Johnny was putting together You Can't Put Your Arms Around the Memory, all he had was that verse and told us that, how he got it from the Jackie Gleason show and stuff like that. We must have played that a million times all summer long, trying to put things together and get a break together for him. And I know Philippe helped him somewhat with the wording on it. I don't want to minimize any Johnny's, his idea and stuff like that.
Right.
That's one of the greatest songs, but we worked forever on that song. And it was, that to me is one of the greatest memories I have of working with him and Philippe.
Guess what? I have a gig after this, and my band is actually covers that. I'll be singing that this afternoon. That's how much I love that song.
Cool.
Yep. What do I want to say? Oh, yeah, and that's that is funny. Steve it comes... What's that?
I was going to say, Steve was a very old friend of Johnny. When did you meet Johnny, Steve?
I met Johnny... 69 through Gail Higgins, also known as Sparkle Moore on Facebook, and Johnny's then girlfriend Janice Capasso, and we used to go to the Fillmore all the time and hang out and stuff like that. And I think Johnny was like 15 or 16 at the time, so we just became friends and hung out for a really, really long time. And then he started putting his bands together and stuff like that, and I didn't stop playing until much later.
That's very cool, man.
So Steve knew Johnny way before the New York Dolls.
What's that, Phil?
I said Steve knew Johnny way before the New York Dolls.
Way before the Dolls, huh? So did, like, you see that transition, Steve, when he got the big hair and the shoes and...
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I actually stayed at Johnny's house when I moved out from Long Island. I stayed at his house in Queens for months. And watching Johnny get dressed in the morning to go out, it's some experience. It sometimes it takes like 2 or 3 hours with him, like changing things like 50 million times. And I got, you know, there's something you can't take away from Johnny. He had to be the best dresser of all time. No matter what his style was, he was definitely the champ of all of them.
That's great. That's fantastic. I love these stories. I love them so much.
I think of Johnny Thunders, the thing that comes to mind right away is that in all the books I read, all documentaries, they seem to only speak about one thing. He took drugs, and I find that so stupid and unfair, because they kind of neglect, I mean, he took drugs, I think, yeah, la-di-da, you know, so what? But they always kind of neglect the fact that he was an amazing performer, an amazing guitar player, and knowing him all these years, what I would see is that he was somebody that was just constantly with his guitar, looking for the next cool tune, looking for the great chord to find, you know. He was just so into it, more than anybody I've ever met. He was 100% rock and roll, completely into it.
Absolutely. We love him here. I say he's the unsung hero of A Crash Course for the Ravers. Us. So, anything else you guys want to say today, or you just want to, you know, make sure you get the book name and all that again, you know, Phil?
Yes, I'll tell you the book name again if anybody just tuned in. It's called Punk Avenue, Inside the New York City Underground, 1972-1982, which is a decade I talk about in the book. It's from Three Rooms Press. It's in the stores now. Or you can order it on Amazon. And I hope everybody will get it and love it.
Are we going to see any more performances from Phil and Steve Shevlin?
We're going to be at a place called The Cast. That's going to be just a book signing. That's on Orchard Street in Manhattan. That's going to be on the 11th. But especially for the people who might come to New York at the end of the month, there's going to be a big Maxis Kansas City reunion record release of a compilation that just put out. The Senders are on it.
Oh, I think
so
I'm going for that.
To play. So we're going to play at that. That's on May 27.
I think I'll be there, man. That sounds good. Yeah, I think I'll have to do the trek down there again. Yeah, you going to be there too, Steve?
Oh, yeah, I sure will. And also, I want to take a moment to thank the Rouses for all their help in getting me ready to do the show with Phil, because I need a lot of help. It's been 30 years since I played again. Those guys are just great, the greatest.
It was great seeing you, Steve.
But then amazingly nice. You see, what happened to us, we wanted to put the senders back together for the occasion, for the book release the other day, and then for the Maxis Center City gig. Unfortunately, and very sadly, we couldn't do that because now Bill Thompson, a guitar player, is recovering in a hospital in Long Island. He had a bad condition called congestive heart failure.
Ooh.
And this is pretty heavy, yeah. So he's just recuperating and resting, so he couldn't make it to the gig. And, you know, without Bill, there could not be no Sanders.
Right.
He's like, he's so essential.
But are you gonna sing at Max's, though, for that, the gig coming up?
Yes, absolutely. But again, Bill won't be able to make it, so it's not going to be the Sanders.
Right.
It's going to be us with the Risers that are very old friends, fantastic guys, and we feel very, very grateful they're helping out since Bill can't make it. They went and learned all the Sanders song and stuff. They've been fantastic.
Yes. Is that the Rousers? Is that what you said?
The Rousers.
Yeah, the Rousers. Yeah, they're great, yeah. Man. Great stuff. Well, hey, thank you both of you so much. I'm glad I am, you know, hopefully I can call you my friends now, because I adore you guys, and it's been great meeting you both.
You can call me my friend. You can call me Flipper.
Flipper. I will.
You can call me on the phone.
I will. You got to give me your home phone number. I will. Hey, I'll bug you all the time, Phil.
No problem.
You noticed that when I called in that other radio station you were on.
Yeah, so see, they didn't call you back. I guess they didn't go for their revenge.
Right. Hey, you can give her a plug if you want. I really don't, you know, I wasn't trying to stomp on her feet. You want to plug your friend's show? You were on her show.
I know you were not. I was just teasing you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was called, it's a show called, I forgot, Red Velvet.
And, Red Velvet.
They have a podcast now, right. If you want to listen to it. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much. Phil Marcade from the Senders, his new book is Punk Avenue. Go out and get it. It's out now. Yeah, I mean, you can get it on Amazon for sure, right, Phil?
Yeah.
Right. And and Steve Shevlin, thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Please keep in touch, both of you, right?
All right. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk soon, all right?
Thanks, man. Bye. All right.
Bye.
Be good. Welcome.
You too. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
91.5 WMFO Medford.